Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm sorry, Blog Talk Business Radio Show.
Yep.
I am your host, speaking to you live from Washington, D.C. I am Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host.
Abdul Aziz Shaheed, Afan Legum. Greetings to you, Brother Bilal, in the audience. How are you, brother?
Same thing to you, Brother Aziz. How are you this evening?
Doing well, alhamdulillah. Doing well, bro.
And we are, of course, another coming to the end of our eighth year. This is the last.
Yeah.
We'll be coming to the end of our eighth year of doing these business broadcasts from the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street. So we're going to continue tonight, Aziz, and again, we're going to continue talking about network marketing and identifying businesses in our community. We know that this time of the year is the biggest money making time in America's marketing is this particular month, and we know African Americans play a very major part in the amount of money that's going to be spent between now and, I would say, around the first of the year, but especially during this time that America celebrates as Christmas.
Yes, indeed.
So we are emphasizing networking with each other and identifying marketing, so hopefully we can get a share of this huge amount of monies that is already being spent and going to continue to be spent throughout the next 3 weeks or so. So African Americans, we are trying to find our businesses as much as we can, and as a matter of fact, we invite any of our listeners to come on to the show and talk about your business. Let us know what products, what services you have for sale. And so we will continue our efforts in trying to locate those businesses. We know for sure that, and brothers and sisters, when we're talking about your getting out at this at any time, but especially during these busy sales days that are ahead of us, we're talking about you. You don't necessarily have to have a store or a brick front, a building, in order to say that I am in business. Only thing you need is your goods and services and being able to display those goods and services. So I would strongly encourage whatever talents you have, whether it be in the hairstyling business, whether it be in the cosmetics, or whether it be in the fashions, or what have you, whatever whatever talents you know you have, and you know someone would be willing to pay for whatever you're doing, is the time to try to display those talents, and that's what network marketing and identifying businesses in our community is all about. So again, we will continue our efforts in identifying businesses in our community. Brother Aziz, that's my opening comments. I am going to now turn it over to you, and hopefully we'll see how our audience participation goes. Of course, this time of year, we know that we will probably won't be getting a lot of attention because many of our listeners are out shopping or doing whatever it is that they do during these holiday times. But we are here, and we will continue to be here right on up until we will announce when we will be more or less closing down for the rest of the year. But for the next week or two, we are right here continuing what we normally do. Although I will say that, Brother Aziz, we're going to monitor our call-in list. And if our call-in list is sort of small, then we will we won't be on the air as long. There's no, we don't see no need in wasting air time, and we don't have the participation. So with that said, Brother Aziz, I am going to now turn it over for your introductions, and we'll see how our call-in situation becomes. Brother Aziz.
Thank you, Brother Bilal. Assalamu alaikum to our audience. Greetings to our audience. You're all right, Brother Bilal. This time of the year, especially the month of December every year, is a month wherein Americans in general spend large amounts of money. But in particular, a lot of the Christmas buying is done by a lot of the African Americans. African Americans, they contribute a lot of money into the Christmas buying spree. And some people, as the Jews, the Jewish people, the Jewish faith, they don't celebrate a Christmas of going out and buying a lot of gifts and giving them to everyone and that. They don't spend their money like that. And when we look into the history of Christmas, we realize, you know, it's just something wherein we go out and spend a lot of money. And I think, personally, nothing wrong with giving people gifts and celebrating joyous times with them, but some of this stuff that's done for Christmas is off the chain. It's not so healthy for us as a community. Giving, we should be, you know, we give charity all year round, as well as giving gifts to people all year round. So that's something that African Americans, I'm not saying one way or the other what you should do during this time of the year and the holidays. I'm just pointing out some of the things that we should be observant of. And for instance, when my brothers and I got older, we told our parents, like, Mom and Dad, why didn't y'all, well, first of all, we had a cousin that was a Jehovah's Witness, and they didn't believe in Christmas. They didn't believe in giving the gifts and all that. So when they came by the house and we was old enough to know, we almost laughed at our cousin Donnie at the time because he didn't get no Christmas gift. And we said, wow, and they were over our house on Christmas. They come by visiting because my father and cousin Don Lee's father, Bill. They were tight buddies, and of course, on Christmas Day in the African American neighborhoods mostly, they do a lot of drinking, a lot of eating, and partying. That's just what it is for it to be a religious holiday. That's what African Americans do. That's our custom. So we thought it was awful that he didn't get any Christmas gifts. So, and so when we grew up later on, we realized that there was no Santa Claus and there wasn't all none of that stuff that they told us. And then we asked Mom and Daddy because we knew they did this. We didn't have a lot of money. My father was in the military. My father, you know, and back in the 40s and 50s, wasn't no black men making no rank farley in there or nothing like that. So Mom and Dad and them, they were in debt. And I know a lot of you listeners that are listening now, they were in debt from December to December, going out buying gifts for us to have so that we wouldn't feel like we wasn't going to get anything. Even if it wasn't the two things you got for Christmas, it was better than getting nothing. That was what they had put in our minds. It was like we were poor if we didn't get anything for Christmas or something like that. And what we didn't realize that our cousin, Donnie Lee, he was told the truth from Jump Street. Boy, it ain't no Santa Claus, it ain't this, it ain't that. So we don't spend money on that. So when your birthday come around, that's when you know you get a gift in there. And as we became adults, we learned that, you know, that was a better tradition. So a lot of African Americans, they today, they practice that Kwanzaa thing. And it still is a time that you give gifts away. And, you know, they got all the Kwanzaa principles that go along with it. And I'm not knocking none of this about giving the gifts away in that. What I'm saying is this act of giving that we're doing during the month of December, it would be, you know, good if we could do that all year long to people. Give all year long to people. Have that spirit of giving, of caring about other people and that. Because right now, as we all know, over in Palestine, or what they call the Gaza now, we know that over 20,000 Palestinian people have been slaughtered and murdered. And the ones that are surviving, they're out there in the open living in pump tents, blankets and things. They got to cover them up, and if it rains or storm, they're going to get soaked. I mean, just the worst conditions. And it's supposed to be Christmas. And, you know, we don't see no aid pouring in there to help the people. Actually, we're looking at the world, look at a people that's just getting decimated. And the whole world is standing by doing nothing about it, absolutely nothing. They're letting a bully go in there and just decimate another people. So if this month is a month of giving, you know, give some support for those that are trying to stop this slaughtering that's going on over there and cease fire, and let the people have a place to have some peace. The children over there are shell shocked. It's going to take years and years for the children to heal because all those buildings over there, they bombed, they had people sleeping on them at night. And a lot of them never got out of there because they bombed the buildings while they were sleeping. Apartment buildings with people sleeping in. So, you know, this kind of bothers me because with all this cheer and stuff going on in America, and we ignoring what's going on around, and they say, you know, it's like the storms or weather patterns around the globe or the earth. When one part of something's happening real terrible on the other part, we're getting the aftershock of that. And so it is when human beings on one side of the planet are getting, you know, mistreated, brutalized, slaughtered, treated inhuman, then it's going to affect us on another side of the planet. And I tell you, people that, you know, believe in treating other human beings with respect and dignity, we should all say something about that. Our African-American brothers and sisters, I want you to know, spend your money that you're going to spend in this Christmas season looking and seeking out African-American business people. I know around the area that Brother Bilal and I live in, that's the metropolitan Washington area, that's including Virginia, Maryland, and extending as far as Baltimore, African-Americans do participate in little flea markets and little vending spaces around the town. It's not just one location where we can go and support these businesses, and there's a lot of them out there. And it would be nice if we did have a building in all the areas and cities around where it was exclusively housing African-American businesses in there, where this would give some brothers and sisters a beautiful jump start in displaying their business in their wares, even if it was just a little small module and you had a roofing company, just showed how you do roofing work, you know, different whatever. You could sell cosmetics, as Brother Lyle say, any little different businesses that you were in it for the business. Then, you know, it'd be nice if you had a place that we could have where people could come and see, do trade with you. This is something that perhaps if people will work on in different cities. I know we had one of our directors out in Oklahoma, Sister Joyce, a few years back was saying that it was some African-Americans there had purchased this mini mall and that they were setting up some different business in there to attract some African-Americans there. And we do see this in a number of little cities where there are many malls that have been abandoned. And it's a good place. And most of these are, of course, in African-American neighborhoods. And when we do see these facilities open up again or these businesses open up again, it's not one of us, but we readily, because there was already a need for a business there because with that one being closed. So we were going to come to it anyway, but it would have been great to have us open up that business in our community and have some of the funds that our people make in that circulate back in the community. And I'm sure that when we have businesses like that in our community and we employ members of the community or African Americans, period, this is one of the ways of circulating the money back in our community. We already know, you know, if one person is working in there, of course, then that's one way, that's one time it's being recirculated, and maybe goes to another business, the cleaner, the beautician. That's two times it's being circulated in our community, but the length of time that it's going to stay in there, that's what's that question, because it varies. We always run away from the community somewhere else to go by and spend our money where else. You know, it was like at a time when we just couldn't run and spend our money everywhere we wanted to. Our black businesses were thriving. They thrived. But when we had the opportunity to go spend our money then and there, wherever we wanted, we couldn't wait to do it. We thought we were getting a better deal, but as we see, the businessman that goes to the marketplace and gets all his merchandise at that special wholesale businessman's price, he's always going to be able to give it to you at a good price on the retail end. But we run to these places wherein we know, we read about it, and still we go there, oh, man, they done marked these items up 100%. An item that costs $100 really might have cost only $10. And what the salespeople do, they get the joy out of marking it up that many times and making money off it. And then later on when they have this big discount sale, it's marked down to this price. He says, I can't believe that, man. You know, earlier this year, man, they had this item on sale for $100, and now they got it for $10 or $15. This is crazy. They must be trying to get And they do that, brothers and sisters, with a lot of the electronics we see out here today that's on the market. You know, it don't take but 1 year and your cell phone is, you know, it's outdated, or your laptop that you just bought, it's outdated. And what all this is leading to, not only us continually buying over and over, trying to keep up in that, but all that stuff that there's no more any, you know, they don't use no more, and they're just throwing it into big landfills, polluting the planet. So what I'm saying to us is, let's spend our money in better ways than just going out and trying to keep up with just what's going on, the latest fad, this and that. You know, put that money into maybe partnering with somebody else that want to go into business, like-minded persons or persons. And that's truly a big step in starting to bring back some businesses in our communities where we still have communities. Because there are a lot of places that was, you know, totally African-American. It's been gentrified, redlined in the sense wherein the people that's coming in has got the money to restore or buy the businesses or buy the homes in those areas wherein the taxes have gone up and the people that live in them, especially the seniors, they can't afford to stay in a home that they've worked all their life for to own and to have, to be able to have, to spend the rest of their years in and enjoying their home. And now they got to move because the tax base is too high for them to keep their home. To me, that's a sin against humanity. It's criminal. And those are some of the things that we should, as American citizens, should talk to our government about, protest to our government. If you're a senior citizen, you're a certain age, your retirement age of 65 or 70, and you're living in your home, you shouldn't have to pay taxes on your house if that's where you're going to be permanent. You're not moving till you die. It should be tax-free. We shouldn't treat our American citizens this way. And these are just things because I'm saying that because there are a lot of African Americans that are losing their homes because of the taxes. A lot of them. And we need to, you know, try to stop that however we can. But back to the basics, when we have businesses and things like that in our community, we'll know about that. That's what brings communities together. You got a business in the community, people are always coming in just like in the barbershop, and they talk. They talk about things, and, you know, they might be talking about the business down the street, the brother's business up the street. Some of us lived in communities back in the day when there was segregation and things like that were going on in our communities down in the South. And no big businesses, like, but businesses, little convenient corner stores that, you know, they sold meat, you know, cold-cut meats and things like that, little items that you would need in the home, you know, maybe some bread or some flour or little items like that. And then you had other people in the community that had other businesses. You know, of course, the barbers and the beauticians. But, you know, you had people in the community that were brick masons, carpenters that did business. And the business we did among ourselves, It was big, and it helped the community stay stabilized. Our people, they earn money outside the community, of course. Of course, they got a lot of money. But the ones that did have businesses in the community, they were able to grow because that's where we would go when we would spend our money, unless it was going to some big clothing store. And what I'm talking about is out in the country, not in the cities where African Americans had bigger communities in the city, and they did have clothing stores that was owned and operated by African Americans, auto body repair places, and mechanic shops. This is what was happening in the larger areas where, and we had mechanics down in the country too. Nothing like those country mechanics. The brothers down there, they knew how to do everything to a car. Didn't have all the technology that we see with the cars today, but we did do business with one another, and that money did circulate back in the community a lot. Maybe five times. By the time you went down the street and bought some eggs from somebody and chicken from somebody else, some greens and some, we did business with one another, and we did fair. We did fair trade with one another. So I encourage that, as Brother Bilal said, 8 years was a long time of broadcasting to the public and promoting and asking and seeking, you know, people to come on and advertise their business and let us know about them, get with other people like mine, network with them. It's just an effort that, you know, we're probably not the only ones in the United States for sure that's trying to promote the network African-American business. But we are one of the biggest ones out there that's trying to do this, because this is something that we want for our children and our children's children, not to be left out, because we don't want to continue to be just the big eaters, the one who's getting fat off of eating and they ain't making no money off of nothing. They're just a consumer. So, you know, if you're in our audience out there, you know, benefited from some of the things, I would say, you know, appreciate it. Brother Bilal, that's my starting takeoff for this evening, you know, because this Christmas thing is so big that the merchants right now got their big street sweepers out there, brother, raking in the dollars. Just as fast as they can be lured in the store. The money they ain't even got it. It's called unarmed robbery.
Again, Brother Aziz, for your comments are well taken. And
thank you.
Like I said, we want to identify African-American businesses, especially during the next 2 or 3 weeks, because of the huge amount of spending that's going to be going on during the holiday season, where the reason they call it Black Friday is because many, many businesses in this country that was in the red, and in the red means that they're trying to make a profit. They're trying to get over their expenses and hopefully make enough sales as to where they can pay their expenses and they can see what is called revenue. You can't see revenue until after you paid your expenses. So that's why they call it Black Friday, because Black Friday, almost all the businesses that was in the red, but during this particular month, starting at the so-called Black Friday up until around the end of the year, many, many companies will go into the black. They'll go from the red to the black. And, of course, going to the black means that they are turning a profit. So that's why during this huge amount of spending, we try to get our share. So if you know of an African-American business, and like I said, the business may not be a store. The business may be, because nowadays you don't need a store in order to become a huge business producer. Only thing you need is your product and the internet services, because that's where the money is being spent, is on the internet. And so if you, I know some, I just purchased, and I know 2 or 3 other African-American females just purchased. We found this sister that makes blankets. beautiful blankets. And these blankets is handmade. And all types of different sizes and I would say qualities, because if you want just a throw over, or you may want a light blanket for your bed or a heavy blanket for your bed, depending on the seasons of the year, this sister can accommodate you. And of course, everything is done right over the internet. I just ordered one of the blankets, which is being made for me as we speak. And I know I found out about it because two other African-American ladies already had their blankets coming in, and I had a chance to see them. So this is the kind of talent that we have in our communities, brothers and sisters. All of us have a talent. We don't. You know what your talent is. You know what you can best do. And whatever it is you can best do, 9 times out of 10 is going to have a value to it. So whatever your talents are, let it be known. And New Africa Black Belt Wall Street is a perfect place to let your talents be known. And so that's what many of our shows are about. But, of course, during this busy marketing time, we're saying, come on, speak about your business. Network your business so we can identify how we can do business with you. So, again, I am going to take a moment and go to one of our sponsors who have a very good product that I've been using, and I know many, many others use this particular product. And, of course, like I said, you can go online. You can see the product, and it's delivered directly to your home or wherever you are requested to be delivered. Let's go to one of our sponsors.
Natural Skincare by Karima with Shea Butter. We offer a great selection of 100% all-natural moisturizing creams for the face and body without preservatives. Also, check out our hair products. Order online and get them delivered to your home. Check out our new online shop at www.etsy.com. Search for Natural Skincare by KHB. For more information, visit us online at www.naturalskincarebykarima.com or email us at naturalskincarebykarima@gmail.com. Give us a call at 301-534-4475 or fax us at 240-318-3537. Try out our newest product, our peppermint foot rub, for a luxurious feeling your feet won't forget.
And again, welcome back to our show. And hopefully you will go online and, like I said, the same way you can support Sister Karima's natural skincare products. And let me tell you, brothers and sisters, the skincare products, they're very, very, very good. And for the prices that she sells, I was watching. I've been heard some one of our Caucasians that was advertising their skincare product. Of course, this was on TV, but the products was running over a couple $100. And and looked like their orders was just coming in from all over the place. So you can't tell me that a skincare product $200 more.
System is disarmed.
I think we have someone who has their system unmuted, but Brother, again, we would ask you to mute your system unless you're going to speak, because we have opened up the mics, because after a brief comments, and especially after I introduce a couple of our state representatives we're going to be going to our communities for their comments and hopefully business identifications. So I won't take up too much time, but I can't emphasize looking for African-American businesses. And I do want to just say, in continuation of what we have been talking about also, and that is African-American banks. When we start talking about money circulation, you see, we can open all the businesses we want, but when our sales are made and monies come in, we're going to be putting our monies into Caucasian's banks. And we know Caucasians are, when our monies go into the Caucasian banks, that the Caucasians use our monies for their own growth. We don't get any kickback when banks give car loans. For every car that a dealership sells, the bank pays the dealerships. We don't get kickbacks when the banks finance a big retail chains when large products are sold and they need to be financed. Then, of course, banks but they're using all of the deposits. Those monies include both African American, Caucasian Americans, and any other Americans that deposit their monies into the banks. We're only concerned about our African-American monies because we know those monies add up into the trillions. And to have that much monies going into a banking system that makes monies from your monies, but everybody is making huge amount of monies from the use of your dollar, and none of it comes back to you. That's why it's so important we have our own financial institutions. And so until we get our own financial institutions, we can open all the businesses we want. But at the end of the day, we won't see those monies that we have earned in our coming back and circulating in our communities, because once it gets into the banks that we have no control of, we have no one on the board of directors, we have no say of what happens to our monies, but we can see that the African-American community have no returns on their monies like you would see in the Caucasian community. The average Caucasian can walk into the bank and say, I want a loan, whether it be, and $10,000 is a small loan. That's usually a handshake loan for Caucasians. But the African Americans, you can't even get a $5 a loan, which is no more than a stipend compared to the monies that we put into the banks. So we must have our own financial institutions, and that way we can deposit our monies into our own banks. Brother Aziz read, and we will continue to announce, many of the African-American banks that are available, and especially, again, we can't emphasize, doing this huge amount of monies where cash is going to be flowing all over this country. And African-American monies, there's a large amount of that cash flow. So use these African-American banks and credit unions that we own and control. And by doing that, these banks and credit unions now can do the same thing. But now they can, as monies is working for, by putting monies into that credit union, now we have monies that can work. And now we can have the privilege of having a car dealership. May not be a new one, but we can have a used car dealership. That's where now we can sell cars to our communities, and it's financed by our own banks. We can have retail businesses in our communities where we can have monies now coming from our credit unions and banks as to where they would have the assets to loan you monies to get into businesses and to do business and have and start growing businesses in the black communities. But it can't happen until we start having our own financial institutions. So again, I am going to turn it over now to let me see how many of my directors are on the phone with us. Sister Aisha, our regional director, our national regional director, she is in charge of, she's one of us. She's in charge of building our association, just like we are. Sister Aisha, are you with us?
Yes. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum salam. And we're going to be right back with you. But let me just make certain we have out of, look like the state of Delaware might be with us. Brother Rashid, are you with us?
Yes, sir, I'm with you. As-salamu alaykum. Good to be here.
Salam, brother. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, brother. How are you guys doing?
Everything's very
good.
Well. We ask that you, you know, you don't have to wait for us to sometimes call you. Anytime you wish to intervene, you can. But coming back now to our national regional director, Sister Aisha, you know, Sister Aisha, and I guess we have to put, mix all this into the same conversation. I know we were, I don't want to get away from the business tone that we're talking about, but at the same time, we have natural disasters that are on top of us as we speak, where millions are in serious danger out there in the Midwest. I couldn't believe, we used to use the word flood, but it looked like the entire ocean is coming in on these towns. I mean, flowing of, I said, wow, how do you even get rescued from this amount of water coming in at you, and it's coming in continuously? So, Sister Aisha, we welcome your comments.
As-salamu alaykum. Good evening, everyone.
It's
certainly, it's a pleasure to be here this evening. And I hope you can hear me well. I'm sort of in a different location a little bit here. Brother Bilal, and I think that you are really on point when we talk about floods and your concern about the situation of floods. Floods usually develop as a result of a tornado in some part of the country that has affected that environment. Now, we talked about the fact storms have consequences thousands of miles away, a storm could occur, such as a hurricane, that occurred in Nicaragua several years ago. But, however, it affected the southern part of the U.S. in the Florida Panhandle, and we call that disaster Eta. Some of you might remember that. But Nicaragua is over 1,000 miles from Florida. But, however, the impact was felt in Florida, doing tremendous damage and loss of lives. So whenever we hear of a natural disaster happening in one part of the country, the U.S., and even outside of the country, eventually that consequence from that storm could affect where we live. At one time in our history of the world, we were one, we were connected. All of the different continents was connected as one body. So don't think that we're in this situation with climate change by ourselves. Every part of the world is having devastations, and we're all going to be affected. Now, what we have to do as a people, certainly, is to prepare ourselves for climate change disasters. And I constantly tell people that the mission of Summit Environmental Resources is to prepare the community, especially the underserved population, and that is the African-American community, poor people, and the people who are not, have been historically underserved by the by investments into our communities. Most of us live in floodplains. Our communities developed in floodplains. It was usually that part of the city or the town that was in the low level, and that is where we were able to buy houses or build houses or move to. And those are primarily in flood areas. But the mission of Summit Environmental Resources is to train and work with our communities on natural disasters that we know are coming. And we're going to do this, fulfill our mission primarily by working with community groups, the nonprofit organizations, the faith-based organizations, the education institutions, the community groups, the PAC organizations in the communities. These are the groups that we are working with, and we will continue to build that constituent base till we get to the point where we can say in 1 year we have touched the lives of over 1,000 people plus as far as training people to be prepared for a natural disaster. So anyone have a question as I speak, please do stop me because I can go on all night long, but that's not what I want to do. I want us to have this dialogue together because the more dialogue we have, the better I have to prepare myself. And I want to have the information for us. It's not many groups out there preparing our people. There are quite a few recovery groups, American Red Cross and those, and many of those groups. They do a phenomenal job in recovery. They do have a preparedness program to some extent. But one of the issues we as African American people have is we are so bombarded with issues in the society. We are not just the climate issues, but the economic issues. We are bombarded with every 5 to 10 years, we have to redefine our position within the society. And we have to look at how our position in the society has deteriorated or progressed. These are issues that bombard us. And when they talk about the increase of PTSD, I think that's what it's called, we have it in an alarming rate in our community because of all the stresses, PTSD. We have all these stresses that we have to overcome, and they change up. They change up every so many years. One of the issues that we're facing with now is called mass psychosis. Now, mass psychosis is when a society, it's a tremendous increase in mental illness in the society. We are also understanding that the issues that many of our young people are faced with, it is as a result of mass psychosis. They are fearful, and they have tremendous anxiety. Fear and anxiety are the two primary elements that causes psychosis. And we are seeing this in our young people. And many of the reasons, or some of the reasons they are experiencing this psychosis, this increase in mass psychosis, is because we as parents and as leaders, community leaders, we're not talking to them about climate change and natural disaster. It is not a conversation that we are having amongst our leadership, in our communities, and in our organizations, and in our households. But when our children go to school, when they are in the society, they hear these words about natural disaster, about climate change. But we're not dealing with the issues. And our young people, not to say that this is the only issue they are faced with. They are faced with many issues. But this is the quiet issue that we as people, African-American people especially, we are not talking about it in our family settings. If we don't talk about it, that means our young people are developing these great fears and anxieties about it. We do not sit down together and have a plan. When young people can participate in developing a plan for the family survival or for the family's protection, it empowers them. And they become less fearful because they believe in having a direction. That's what their education system teaches them. You have to have a direction. You have to know where you're going, and you have to study hard to get there. So it's incumbent upon us as parents, as community leaders, to sit down with our young people, make a plan for the family, because you know from past experience of disasters, the first 72 hours of a natural disaster, you are totally on your own. When you get that alert, you need to evacuate. But you have to know where you're going. And you have to go there. You have to know how you're going to get there. And there is no federal agency that's going to come to you when the alert is sounded to tell you where to go. They don't do that. the alert sound comes, you know, over the tremendous speakers or over the cell phone or whatever device you might have. You have got to know what to do. There's no one there to tell you. You have to know well in advance whether or not you can evacuate or whether or not you're going to have to shelter in place because you have no mechanism such as transportation to evacuate. You have no place to go because you live in an apartment building and you don't have any relatives. You don't have any relationships. So you don't know where to go or where to go with someone else. These are relationships that we have got to start developing once again. We used to have these community relationships. Now everybody, it seems like, want to think independently of each other. But we're coming into a point in our lives where we have to reshape our communities. We have to start engaging our neighbors because during time of a natural disaster, and I think you, if you see what's taking place in Hawaii and other places, community people are having to come together to help each other. So we as a community of people, we have to be conscientious of how we are moving in the society now. If we truly want our survival and the survival of our family and our, especially our young people, they have to become knowledgeable. And it's incumbent upon us to train them. But we can't train them unless we are trained as parents, as the leaders in the household. So for our audience, get with your community groups. Get with your faith-based groups. Talk to them about disaster preparedness training. Contact us here at this station every Wednesday night. Let's set up a time where we can come to your organization, whether primarily virtually, or sometimes we will do in person. But we need to be before your group, 100 people, 200 or 300 people, talking about how to get prepared and showing you how to prepare for a natural disaster. Because if we don't, as a community, come together in this way, many of us are not going to make it. Because we don't have a plan. This is very important. So I would like if you, some of you could ask me questions as we go forward in this with this discussion.
Our mics are open, everyone. We don't have a large audience, but we do have an audience, and so our mics are open for those of you who are listening. I have opened the mics, so if you have any questions or if you have any comments, we welcome your comments. Our mics are open.
Hey, Aisha, this is Sister Aisha. This is Nadir Rashid in Delaware.
Yes,
I wanted to ask you because, alhamdulillah, how have you been? So, assalamu alaikum. I haven't been here long. I've been in Delaware about 2 years. Don't know how many natural disasters they've had here. I know in the groups that I deal with from the Chamber of Commerce and a couple of people that I've spoken with, I have seen them. I remember one event where they had the FEMA people there, et cetera. I was going to ask you when you mentioned, you know, I guess my first step here in Delaware would probably be to see who here actually handles the natural disasters, et cetera, and then from there, what I'll do is contact that group, see how they meet, get involved with them, and then I'll coordinate with you, God willing, inshallah, to see how we can do the very thing you're asking, because I do think it's a great idea. I haven't heard of any natural disasters here in Delaware. That's not to say there haven't been any, but I would be curious to see how they would actually, or what kind of training they actually even have regarding what you're mentioning.
Yeah. Well, the first thing you need to do is understand where you are, where Delaware is located in the scenario of regions. I mentioned repeatedly that FEMA has divided the country, the United States, into 10 different regions. And Delaware is located in the Mid-Atlantic region, Region 3. Region 3. That's if you hear any of your the federal government or anyone mentioning Region 3, because they usually do not mention states anymore. They mention regions. You know that applies to you. The other states that are in Region 3, along with Delaware, is Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Washington, D.C., and West Virginia. So those are the states that when federal funds are allocated by FEMA to Region 3, those are the states that are recipients of those funds, okay? So what you want to do is contact your state hazard mitigation officer. Every state has a hazard mitigation officer. Although you are in Region 3, you're in the state of Delaware. Delaware has that person. That person is responsible for receiving federal funds from the region, Region 3. And they will then allocate those funds to organizations in Delaware. Do you follow the – are you following me, brother?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So basically where I am is considered Mid-Atlantic region, region number 3. Those the other states affiliated with it would be Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Washington, D.C., and West Virginia. And you basically said get in touch or try to contact – I think you said the state hazard mitigation officer?
Yes, every state, every state in the U.S., has a person that is responsible for the, it's called the State Hazard Mitigation Officer. That officer has a division. Okay. You need to find out, and you can probably Google it, State Hazard, Delaware Hazard Mitigation Officer. You can probably Google it and find out exactly who that person is, telephone number and everything. That person will know federal funds to assist nonprofits, community-based organizations in writing grants and submitting grants for funding for climate change, disaster, or mitigation. Okay, mitigation, of course, if you see that word, you know what it means. It simply means to lessen the impact of something. And it's a common word now used when it comes to climate change. Hazard mitigation, you know, disaster mitigation, just to lessen the impact. So anything that you can do, and preparedness is one of the primary tools to mitigate the impact of climate change. And the Biden administration, and I'm not necessarily tooting the Biden administration, but only to tell you what is taking place, they are putting tremendous resource or have already put tremendous resources and made it available, and over $700 million in that preparedness, mitigation of climate change. And these funds go down to the different, dispersed through the different regions, and from the regions to the states that are, that comprise those regions. That's the structure now. And the more we learn about the structure that the federal government has put in place to allocate resources, the more of an opportunity we will have in order to write the grant that will allow us to have access to these resources. And I'm not saying grants is the only, from the federal government, is the only potential sources. There are many, quite a few philanthropic organizations that give funding to their causes. And many of their causes now is climate change. So we have to get busy and we have to become informed. And we have to certainly seek out all types of assistance, especially, Brother Bilal, flood assistance is a tremendous area now because we are seeing more floods. We are seeing more emotional distress caused by floods and other disasters. All of these are issues that we have to address in our community, and we are asleep. We need to wake up. And we have, and I understand it's very difficult. We just don't want another problem we have to deal with. And if we can escape another problem, we're going to escape it as much as we can. But we have got to get into this. I hate to call it a game, but we've got to get there. And we've got to start participating. We talk about how disasters, natural disasters, destroy generational wealth. And we're waiting to see the numbers of generational wealth destruction that has taken place in the African-American community nationwide as a result of natural disasters. We know that the people from Katrina are still suffering. I talk to them often, and they tell me, you know, their homes that they had that they were going to leave to their children, which is generational wealth, some homes are gone. Many of them are now who were homeowners, business owners. They are now living in public housing, and they don't think they'll ever recover. And this is causing tremendous emotional distress, extreme anxiety, chronic illness, physical illness, psychological illness, mental illness. This is taking place as we speak, especially in down as a result of Katrina. The people in Maui and Lahaina, they are now experiencing this distress because the regulations state, the national regulations state, that in order for the federal government to assist you after a disaster, you must have some identification to show who you are, to substantiate who you are. You must be able to show through your driver's license or something that you live at 1400 Elm Street in order to claim that as your property that has been destroyed. Many other people, and you saw it on television, as they were running away from the fire and the smoke and over in Lahaina, they had nothing in their hands. They had no ID. They had no purse. They had no backpack. They had nothing. Now, they are in a total state of distress because they cannot prove, over a majority of them cannot prove who they are. They ask the neighbors to vouch for them, but the federal government can't take that because the neighbors that are vouching for them, they too are in the same boat. No identification. So these seem like very simple things, but they are issues that we're going to have to start addressing and become knowledgeable of. So I hope, Brother Rushoff, that I answered your question.
Yes, ma'am, you did. I was just thinking as you were speaking that, I guess in speaking with that, or like you said, I can Google and find that information and we'll reach out to him or her. I was just wondering also, I guess
well,
based
if you
on...
if you can't find it, brother, get back with me. I can find it for you, okay, if you
okay.
cannot find it, all right? But go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, I was about to say, I was wondering if the state of your concern in reference to what we're talking to is, you know, they have so much money that they probably have assigned to each area, et cetera. And I guess in reference to us talking or listening to you speak in reference to the underserved communities, I guess that would probably be the most interesting question is to see in Delaware, how is the money for that purpose divvied up?
Yes. Yes. That's going to be very insightful for you to see that. And
right.
Now we are getting to the point where many, and if you know of nonprofits, if you know a nonprofit organization, bring your nonprofit organization to this network, Black Belt Wall Street. We need to form large groups of nonprofit organizations from all over the country. We need to become organized. These can be community organizations, faith-based organizations, but we must go together as a block of people, hundreds of people. Your organization, another organization, come together for this one purpose of preparing their constituent base, their membership base, the fraternity organizations, the sorority organizations, the churches. We have to come together and get trained. Those funds are available. I just came from a two-day conference that I mentioned last week. It was held last month on the 14th, 15th of last month, and it was for all community. That was the slogan, all community program. And there were over 50 federal agencies at this convening. It used to be called conference. Now it's called convening. And those organizations were telling the group, telling us the funds that were allocated last year for mitigation, all of those funds have not been used, and we're going into another year of allocation because organizations, nonprofits, did not come forward to write the grants that were available. So, therefore, the ones who knew, they got the funds. But then the ones who did not know, who are in dire need, and that's us in the underserved population, very few of us got the funds because we did not know, we did not come forth. So whatever nonprofit organizations you know of. Talk to them. And not just yourself, but for all of our listening audience. Talk to your nonprofit organizations. Form an alliance and go after funding. Contact us at this station, contact Summit, and we can direct you. We can work with you in identifying the resources. There are national organizations that do the same thing that we're in touch with. So all we are saying, if we don't become organized as a people, we're going to be left out. And interesting, brother, it has nothing to do with education level. It used to be in our community the people who had the most education were the ones who were the most progressive. That is not the case anymore. So it does not have anything to do with education. It does not have anything to do with your lineage. It has nothing to do with what school you went to. We are finding that we as an African-American people, when it comes to climate change, we are all in the same boat together. And that boat is sinking because we do not have the sufficient knowledge of how to navigate the system that we're in. And it has changed tremendously.
Can you help us as a listening audience, Sister Aisha, to have a better understanding of, like, when you say, let's say, for instance, people receiving that funding, let's say, I don't know, I guess, in reference to the people who would try to get that funding, the organizations that would try to get the funding, the training, et cetera, I mean, what is the normal process? Let's say, for instance, if a nonprofit did receive funding, is that funding for providing storm shelters in their community? Is that funding? Give us an idea as a listening audience, and maybe my question, because I'm not familiar with this area at all. But I was just trying to think as far as the listening audience or what was going through my mind is for when I hear training or, you know, get this funding with grants, what would that money go toward in that community?
What if the grants are written based on the needs of the community? Now, realizing there's a common theme. The theme is hazard mitigation, okay? That's a broad topic, and there are many projects that fit under that theme of hazard mitigation, okay? And you will see the language in the grant, and there are different grants for different things, different aspects of hazard mitigation. So if a community organization, many of its members, say, live in a flood zone, and you will know if you live in a flood zone, and you need barriers erected. Well, there are departments within the U.S. government that work on those issues. If you are a community organization and most of the people are seniors and they don't have the ability to evacuate, to get in a car and go somewhere, then there are organization funding set up to assist them in building a structure or having some resources available when there is a storm. Or if you are a community organization and if you serve families need training in the basic concept of what to do before a storm and what to do after a storm. This is training. And it also, people can become equipped with the essential supplies. So when the storm does come, they will have the supplies already on hand. All they have to do is pick up their go bag that is stuffed with supplies and evacuate. But people have to have access to the supplies. And this is where we assist with that as well. So we want, first I would say to you, become familiar with the state of Delaware. What is available in Delaware, okay? Contact your state hazard mitigation officer and ask them about grants that your nonprofit can apply for. And in most cases, Delaware is a small state, so they'll probably spend more time with you. In the larger states, they then send you to the website because everything is on the internet. And it'll outline the grant that you can apply for, that your nonprofit can apply for. And it will tell you the theme of the grant, what the grant, the purpose of the grant. But you have to have people who are organized, okay? Yes, sir.
Yes,
I got you. Aisha. Thank you, man.
Yes.
Sister Aisha, and first of all, before I get started, I want to give our audience a chance. Our mics are open. Anyone who have comments, we welcome your comments. All right. Well, and getting back, I want to continue what we're talking about as far as, you know, preparedness and mitigations and grants and what have you. But when you, I can't help but to continue to consider what you were talking about when you started talking about fear and mental psychosis. You know, that's happening in our communities, especially the African-American communities, all over the country, and especially in our large cities where you're having so many teenagers either committing suicide or they're committing crimes. And when you start talking about fear and the mental psychosis that comes from fear, disasters, is something that we as African Americans have been living with for a long, long time. And some of the, of course, natural disasters, which we've been discussing, but then those disasters that are not natural, those disasters that are enforced on a community. And we know, like we were saying earlier, using our own banks and having a way of our economics to grow in our community, because we have a community now. Most of our communities is like a ghost community. It's like a ghost town. Because in African-American communities, there is no economical development. There is no, even though we have such a powerful economical input into our economic, into the Americans' financial systems, we have nothing that can show advancements or growth or opportunities, especially for our young folks who don't know how to deal with these disasters of poverty that poverty brings on. So, and I know this is what we are constantly talking about as far as we're saying we have to turn around our economical dollars. We have to make our dollars work for us in our own communities, but of course that's not happening as we speak anyway. So, but at the same time, the fear and the psychosis that many of us, and I'm saying most of us especially, whose incomes are low, who are homeless, who can't afford their rent, even though the husband and wife both work full-time jobs, the cost of living is just so high until they find that they're just about homeless still. So how do you see mitigating a situation like that?
Well, that's a good question, Brother Bilal. I think the way to mitigate mass psychosis is to talk to our young people, because they are the next generation. Help them get rid of a lot of the fear and anxiety that they are now experiencing in this society. And I think that if that is a great starting place, just talk with them, because they see the same thing that we see on television, and that is the nightly news telling us about another disaster, another tornado or a storm that has devastated communities. They see the same thing, but they are not getting instruction from the family, from the adults. So we need to start with our young people. We also need to look at where we are putting our values, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that the economic position of our communities have deteriorated tremendously. Communities that used to be quote-unquote middle class for black communities now are communities that middle-class people don't want to live in, and they are moving out. Middle-class black families don't want anymore. They're moving out. And, of course, gentrification concept is coming in. And that was the plan anyway. So I think it begins within the family structure. Everything begins within the family. If our community-based, faith-based organizations can inspire the families to come together within the communities. And I think that was a great mission at one time. And I have to think that many of those efforts have been pushed aside, and it is not as aggressive as it used to be, not just in the churches or the synagogues or the mosques. It's in all of the institutions. The membership is dwindling. People are leaving the faith-based institutions. So I think it has to begin there, and it has to begin in our community. And we have to deal with some basic realities. Fortunately, and I thought I would never say this, but fortunately, I grew up during a time of segregation. And I thought I would never say fortunately, but our lives were so much better in many aspects during segregation than they are now. We had community. We had a sense of purpose. And when one person was hungry in the community, it was everyone's concern. So we protected each other. And, yes, we had natural disasters, And we had many people who would lose their lives, especially, interesting enough, with the elderly, also single men. They were the next population that would perish during a natural disaster. But we had a community that would come together and rebuild a person's house that was blown down, give people food, give them shelter. We had that sense of community. Now, with integration, things are all divided up and chopped up. We don't have those relationships like we used to have. So we have to revisit the past, the best part of our lives, and we have to come together. And until we do it, I think we're going to get further and further apart, thinking that we are part of a broader society, of which basically I don't think we are. I don't feel that I am. But I think that we have got to become responsible for ourselves. And when doing integration, segregation, we were responsible for our own communities. We had to take care of them. We have now become more dependent on another system to care and be responsible for us. Like I said earlier, the first 72 hours of a natural disaster, you are totally on your own. And now, it's probably the first, instead of the first 3 days, it's moving now to the first 5 days before any agency can necessarily get to you. And it's primarily due to the volume of storms, disasters that we're having. And the agencies are just overtaxed already. And as natural disasters increase, we're going to find ourselves more isolated from the federal system than we are becoming. And our local government, and our county government, and our state government. The resources are just not there.
Sister Aisha, now, of course, with that said, now I am going back to what Brother Rashid and the rest of us here to talk about as far as grants. And grants being issued for our different regions. Of course, you and I know, and Brother Aziz and I was at the Department of Commerce, and that was their biggest conversation, was the huge amount of monies. In addition to the huge amount of monies, like you said, it's a carryover from the monies that wasn't spent and with FEMA last year. Well, it's all the other agents have this huge amount of monies that's been appropriated for growth of communities that have been deprived. And so with all of this money that one claims that they're having for these communities that are deprived, they're saying submit your information to in this case, we were talking about states, but the states are the federal government, and submit your information, which would be your grant, your whatever your business plan is, your ideas. And we know that when it comes to natural disasters and dealing with FEMA, we know that there is a certain language, a certain communication that they're looking for when they read your grant proposal. And we've heard them talk about this. And, of course, if these are communications that they're looking for is not in order, then 9 times out of 10, your grant and your proposal isn't going anywhere. We know that we have you, a scientist, one who have studied and lectured in many universities, one who has been with FEMA for I don't know how long, one that we have been working with now for a few years, and we've heard your teachings and your lectures. Therefore, saying that to say, the expertise, and I have to say this, as far as submitting the grants and the right language, we know that language. Saying that to say that that Black Belt Wall Street, which is a nonprofit working through Summit, we are going to apply for these grants. And we're going to apply for these grants for all of the regions where we know that there's a large portion of African Americans. If the federal government is saying we have these monies for communities that have been, and they, like they said, they use the word, and we know the word, that has been discriminated against, then we are saying that we are going to use our expertise. Being that we can't train, and all year, for the last year, we've been trying to train, but the public, sometimes our general public, like you're saying, society just don't talk about things, or they don't respond to things, or they may be just they might be just neglected of their communities. But we, those of us who care, first of all, and those of us who have the expertise, are talking about putting in these grants, and these grants would be enough monies as to where those in local states, we would be asking for grants for them in our behalf. And I know this is something that we but I guess what I am trying to say is, what do you think? Because you would be our principal. Of course, we can, as far as putting the business plan together, we can do that collectively. But, of course, you would be the principal because we're so fortunate to have a person of your knowledge. And let me just, and we know, you could go all over this country, and I'm talking about now going to the Caucasian communities, and they wouldn't have the information that you have provided for us. So next year, and after going to the Department of Commerce, and of course you went to meetings that was held in the states, we're going to answer the government's call, and we're going to put in these for these grants. And of course, as you can see, if you're talking about grants for so many different regions, then you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. But from what we have heard, they got billions of dollars that they're
absolutely
setting up, they're ready to appropriate. So
absolutely.
I'm going to turn that up. That's my comments, and I will welcome your comments.
Well, Brother Bilal, I think that you really have a great understanding of what is taking place, and I'm sure that going to the Department of Commerce convening was helpful. But I think that you had an understanding prior to going there, and so you were just able to take away some of the stuff that they information that they conveyed to you. But I think ever since I have met and been affiliated with Black Belt Wall Street, we have been talking the same scenario. We have been connected. Yes, there are billions of dollars in grants that we were told that were still being made available, and the people in the underserved population are not coming forth requesting the funds. Now, I did also understand that we have to go as a group, as a unified group of people, serving hundreds of people. And if we come together, the nonprofit organizations use this forum here, Black Belt Wall Street, as the forum to drive the application process of grants for their organization and to be the administrator of those grants, to assist these organizations, because you all have the financial background. You all are the financial people. You understand the budgets and how to put everything together so it would be squeaky clean when audits are taking place. If they will use this vehicle that is already in place, it would serve them greatly, because you already know what they will have to learn in order to put their grant together. In addition, yes, I met some organizations located right there in D.C. Community First, they are a big group there. The Hive HIVE Fund, they are a large group. And these are groups that are actually situated to assist the nonprofit groups to get the grants. Now, they play a strategic role because in many cases, especially the Hive HIVE Fund, they are very connected with the philanthropic organizations, which are the for-profit companies. They are already connected with the philanthropy in that area. So if the nonprofits come this way, if they come to the Black Belt Wall Street platform and have their mission statement and all of their paperwork put together, we can certainly help them identify grants through the network that we can utilize from the convening that you all went to, you and Brother Aziz, and the one that I went to, that I took three other people with me, so we would make sure that we conceptualize this whole thing. Yes, we can assist these groups, and we can certainly be a part of what their desires are, because we have the same desire, and that is to mitigate the impact of a natural disaster on our family and to use resources to move forward with the development of our communities and our families. And so I think now we're at the point where we need the nonprofit organizations to come forth and identify who they are. And some of them are small. That's fine. They don't have to be big organizations. The constituent base of a small organization can balloon overnight, and that's based on a community development, community organization concept. So, yes, our listening audience, if you have community organizations, you have nonprofits, bring them forth. And because we certainly have the platform right here through Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association, that can put these grant applications together, who can work with the nonprofits.
So with that said, Sister Aisha, you and I know that numbers are everything.
Absolutely.
Therefore, we need the numbers in all of these regions. That's why it's so important for our state directors to bring on board as many members, as many organizations, because if these funds are out there, you're not going to get hundreds of millions of dollars appropriated to you unless the numbers are there. So we have the expertise. We know we have the expertise. But we know we can't go nowhere without the numbers. We have a great big job to do starting right now. But, of course, during these holidays, I don't know how much you're going to be heard as far as business and talking about business organizing and network marketing and what have you, because that's not the language of Santa Claus. But after we get past this of great big attention that Santa Claus get, we have a huge job to make certain we bring on members, because we need the members in order to get the grants, and of course the grants we're talking about, if they saying they got billions of dollars in all of these federal agencies, and I know Brother Aziz and I was there, I know they must have had seven to about 10 different agencies. And I could start running them all down. But all of them are saying the same thing. We got billions of dollars sitting in our funds waiting to be appropriated to disaster areas that have been discriminated against. So, yes, I say maybe it's time that we focus, and I say we, I'm talking about Black Belt Wall Street, we focus our efforts towards doing what we're asking the community to do. And we ourselves will go out and do it, but we need the community behind us, and we need the community involvement. And so that will be one of the big efforts that we will be trying to put together is this huge grant that would represent all the different regions. Well, we know that there's African Americans and others, But again, our emphasis is the athlete. Because, again, that's what the government is saying their emphasis is. We're glad to hear it, but now we need to see action. So,
very good.
Brothers and sisters, our mics are still open. Our mics are still open, and we welcome your comments. And we have any other, is any estate directors, anyone from, I know sometimes Oklahoma can be a little quiet on us. And listen, Oklahoma, are you with us? Okay, well, in that case, Brother Rashid out of the state of Delaware, we any comments that you wish to share with us? And but like I said, our job some every day when we wake up is to have members, and we and all of you will, have business cards. I ordered new business cards for all of our state directors. You'll be getting those business cards in the mail, I would say before the first of the year. So you have a cards to pass out, but we must get to our communities. We must give network marketing and identify businesses, and not only businesses, but the natural disaster training that we offer. With that, go back to our open mics. And Sister, we know that this is still your hour, so I am going to go back to the open mics and you.
Well, our hour is almost up. We just have a few minutes left. We want to remind our audience, we mentioned it last week, about the high increase in insurance, property insurance. And we are looking at Florida. In 2023, Florida had quite a few, was a tremendous hurricane year for Florida, whether they were small or large. And as a result, Florida has the highest insurance rate, homeowners insurance rate in the country, followed by Louisiana, which has the third. And many insurance companies are leaving these states. California has been hit hard by insurance companies just pulling out. And so this is another increase in the cost of a natural disaster that we are suffering with, especially people in the underserved population. Did you, and I mentioned that now your credit score can determine how much you pay for your policy. And I had never heard that in the past, but I am told that that is now one of the considerations. So we have to look at, and we also found out that in some states, people are paying $1,000, $2,000 a month just for fire insurance. So that makes it totally prohibitive for most of us to even remain in our homes. So these are the issues that we as a population have got to deal with as we move into 2024, we're going to once again be devastated by many disasters. It's already been predicted. But, folks, we have got to be prepared. Preparedness builds resilience. Resilience is your ability to bounce back after a natural disaster. The people that was impacted by Katrina had zero to very little resilience. They could not bounce back. They didn't have a plan. They didn't know what hit them until it hit them. And then they were stuck. They couldn't get out the city. They had no place to go. They were actually hundreds of people, hundreds, were waiting for a bus to come pick them up. And it took 3 to 4 days for the city to mobilize where it could get buses to pick people up to take them to Texas. You're on your own. So we've got to do better as a community and as a nation. And hopefully this will be a great start for us. Okay. So,
can you just imagine? Can you just imagine when we start talking about mitigation? Can you just imagine, like I said, what's going on as we speak right now? The oceans are overflooding at least 3 to 4 states, Seattle, Portland, the Dakotas. I mean, the rivers. The rivers are so intense until you can't even drive a boat. Until this thing calms down some. Can't even drive a boat. Only thing they can get out to you is choppers. So again, when it comes to a mitigation, how in the world are these folks going to ever recover from ocean flooding up their entire? And some of these homes may be underwater. Because the water just grow higher and higher. And this is, I'm saying, 4 or 5 different states.
Yes.
How in the world, what kind of, and we know if flood insurance, these folks don't have flood insurance, they can't afford it.
Can't afford it.
Right, they weren't expecting no flood.
Yeah, flood insurance is issued by the federal government, and people can't afford it.
So again, I don't have words for it. It's just using your imagination and saying, my goodness, where's the recovery going to come from? So
Start caring for ourselves and taking care of ourselves and not being so dependent, because the system can only do so much when there are so many storms in different parts of the country. The resources will become very limited on what FEMA and the other recovery groups can handle. You know, so we as a people, either we're going to just stay in place and allow it to happen to us, or we're going to do something about it. I personally have no intentions of, by the grace of Allah, sitting and waiting. We have got to do something. So that's the position that we're in, and hopefully let's go into 2024 with the understanding that we're going to be successful and getting the resources, but we got to put the resources in the right place and do the work correctly. Okay?
Yeah.
And brothers and sisters, have memberships, spread the information. We must have numbers. So until next week, we thank you for your time, your attention, and all of our state directors, we certainly thank you for the work that you're doing. I am going to say good evening.
Girl, you're watching me every time I turn my head, you're all I see. To look in your direction, it appears that you're paying no attention. But you know,
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another edition of the New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio and Black Wall Street Business Association. I am your host,